Chapter 15. Bull. Bull's hand terminal sat on the cart's thin plastic dashboard, jiggling with every bump in the corridor floor. The siren blatted its standard two-tone, scattering people from his path and calling them out behind him. If they didn't know yet, they all would in minutes. The death of the Sung-un wasn't the sort of thing you could overlook. On the small, jittering screen, the destroyer exploded again. At first, it was only a flicker of orange light amidships, something that could have been electrical discharge or a Gauss gun finishing its maintenance regimen. Half a second later, sparkles of yellow radiated out from the site. 2 seconds after, the major detonation. Between one frame and the next, the destroyer's side bloomed open. Then nothing for 10 full seconds before the fusion reactor core emerged slowly from the back, brighter than the sun. Bull watched the intense white gases begin to diffuse out and fade into a massive golden aurora, a drop of gold losing cohesion in the oceanic black. He looked up to make the turn onto the ramp that would take him back to the office. A young man ambled slowly out of his path, and Bull leaned on the cart's horn. "There's a siren," Bull yelled as he passed the young man, and got an insolent nod in reply. "Okay," Serge said from the terminal. "We're getting the first security analysis. Best guess, something blew out in one of the power conduits. Fused the safety system so they couldn't shut it down. Would have taken about that long to turn the whole starboard main circuit to molten slag." "What blew?" Bull demanded. "Probably a maneuvering thruster. About the right place for one. Get it hot enough, water skips steam and just goes straight to plasma. Cuts right through the bulkheads around it." Bull turned the cart around a tight corner and slowed to let a half dozen pedestrians get out of his way. "Why'd they dump core?" "Don't know, but probably they thought they'd lose containment. They got 6 ships diverting now to keep from plowing into that mierda." "If they'd lost containment, it'd be worse. They'd be diverting to avoid bodies and shrapnel. Are there survivors?" "Yeah. They're putting out the distress request. Medical and evacuation. Sounds pretty fucked up, Keno." "What about trace data? Can we tell who shot him?" "No one shot him. Either it was a straight accident or..."
Or
it wasn't." Bull bit his lip. An accident would be bad enough. People on all sides of the system's power structure were on edge, and a reminder that Earth's fleet was aging and poorly maintained wouldn't make anything easier. Sabotage would be worse. The closest thing to good news was that everyone had seen it, and there wouldn't be any accusations of enemy action. If there'd been a Gauss round or a lucky missile that had slipped through the Sung-un's defenses undetected, the scientific mission could turn into a shooting war faster than Bull wanted to think about.
"Are we offering assistance?" Bull asked.
"Give us a breath, boss," Serge said. "Ashford ain't hearing any of this faster than us." Bull leaned forward, his hands wrapping the steering controls until his knuckles went white. Serge was right. What happened outside the ship was Ashford's problem, and Pa's. He was security chief, and he needed to think about what needed doing inside the behemoth. People would be scared, and it was his job to make sure that fear didn't turn into hysteria. Watching a ship blow out, even an enemy ship, reminded everyone how tenuous life was with only a thin skin of steel and ceramic to keep the vacuum at bay. It reminded him. The cart hit a larger bump than usual, and his hand terminal slipped onto its side.
"Okay," Bull said. "Look, we're going to need to get relief supplies ready in case the captain decides to offer assistance. How many survivors can we take on?"
Serge's laughter rasped.
"All of them. With a pinche behemoth. We got enough room for a city, us."
"Okay," Bull said, smiling a little despite himself. It was a stupid question.
"The only thing we got to worry about is..."
The line went dead.
"Serge? Not funny," Bull said, and then, "Talk to me, mister."
"We got something. Broadcast coming from a private corvette called the Rocinante."
"Why do I know that name?" Bull asked.
Yeah, Serge said. I'm putting it to you. The handset screen blacked out, jumped, and then a familiar face appeared. Bull let the cart slow as James Holden, the man whose announcement about the death of the ice hauler Canterbury started the first war between Earth and Mars, once again made things worse. Ship that approaches the ring without my personal permission will be destroyed without warning. Do not test my resolve. Oh no, Bull said. Oh shit, no. It has always been a personal mission of mine to assure that information and resources remain free to all people. The efforts of individuals and corporate entities may have helped us to colonize the planets of our solar system and make life possible where it was inconceivable before, but the danger of someone unscrupulous taking control of the ring is too great. I have proven myself worthy of the trust of the people of the Belt. It is a moral imperative that this shining artifact be protected, and I will spill as much blood as I have to in order to do so. Bull scooped up the hand terminal and tried to connect to Ashford. The red trefoil of command block blinked on the screen and shunted him to a menu that let him record a message for later. He tried Pa and got the same thing. Holden's message was looping now, the replayed words just as idiotic and toxic the second time through. Bull said something obscene through clenched teeth. He pulled on the cart, turning the wheels as far as they would go, and stamped on the accelerator. The central lifts were only a minute or two away. He could get there. Just please God let Ashford not do anything stupid before he got to the bridge. That true, boss? Serge said. Did Holden just claim us all the ring? I want everyone on security mobilized right now, Bull said. Enemy action protocols, corridors clear and bulkheads closed. Anyone on a weapons or damage control team, wake them up and get them dressed. You're in charge of that. You got it, boss, Serge said. Someone asks, where are you? Trying to keep from needing them. Bien. The familiar corridors seemed longer than usual. The awkwardness of floors built to be walls and walls intended as ceilings more surreal. If he'd been on a real battleship, there would have been a simple, direct path. If the behemoth's great belly had been spinning, it would have been better than this. He willed the cart faster, pushing the engine past what it could do. The alert klaxon sounded, Serge calling everyone to brace for battle. A crowd had formed at the lift, men and women trying to get back to their stations. Bull pushed through them, the shortest person there. An earther, like Holden. At the lift, he activated the security override, called the first car, and stepped in. A tall, dark-skinned man tried to follow him. Bull put a hand on the man's chest, stopping him. Take the next one, Bull said. I'm not going where you want to be. As the lift rose toward the bridge like it was ascending to heaven, Bull used his hand terminal to grasp for any information. He didn't have access to the secure channels, only the captain and the XO had those, but there was more than enough public chatter. He ran through the open feeds, grasping for a sense of the situation, watching for a few seconds here, a few seconds there. The Martian science team and their escort were raging at Holden on every feed, calling him a terrorist and a criminal. The Earth flotilla's reaction was quieter. Most of the public conversation was coordinating the rescue efforts on the Sung Un. The high-energy gas from the core dump was confusing some of the relief crew's comms, and someone fairly smart had started using the public feeds to coordinate them. It had the grim efficiency of a military operation, and it gave Bull hope for the Earth Navy crew still alive on the Sung Un, as much as it scared him about what was going to come after. Holden's message was repeating, spilling out over the public feeds. At first, it just came from the Rocinante, but soon it was being relayed on other feeds along with commentary. Once the signal got back to the Belt and the inner planets, it was going to be the only thing anyone talked about. Bull could already imagine the negotiations between Earth and Mars, could practically hear them reaching the conclusion that the OPA had gotten too confident and needed to be taken down a notch. Someone on the behemoth put out a copy of Holden's message with a split-circle emblem over it, and a commentary track saying that it was about time that the belt take its place and demand the respect it deserved. Bull told Serge to find the feed and shut it down. After what felt like hours, and probably wasn't more than 4 minutes, the lift reached the bridge, the doors opening silently before him, and let Bull out. The bridge wasn't designed for battle. Instead of a real war machine system of multiple stations and controlled lines of command, the Behemoth's bridge was built like the largest tugboat ever made, only with angels blowing golden trumpets adorning the walls. The stations, single stations with a rotating backup scheme, were manned by belters, looking at each other and chatting. The security station was through a separate door and stood unmanned. The bridge crew were acting like children or civilians. Their expressions were bright and excited. People who didn't recognize danger when they saw it, and assumed that whatever the crisis was, it would all work out in the end. Ashford and Pa were at the command station. Ashford was speaking into a camera, talking with someone on one of the other ships. Pa, scowling, strode toward Bull. Her eyes were narrow and her lips bloodless. "What the hell are you doing here, Mr. Baca?"
"I've got to talk to the captain," Bull said.
"Captain Ashford's busy right now," Pa said. "You might have noticed we have a situation on our hands. I would have expected you to be at your duty station."
"Yes, Exo, but your station isn't on the bridge. You should leave now."
Bull clenched his jaw. He wanted to shout at her, but this wasn't the time for it. He was here to make it work, and that wasn't going to help.
"We've got to shoot him, ma'am," Bull said. "We've got to fire on the Rocinante, and we've got to do it now."
All heads had turned toward them. Ashford ended his transmission and stepped toward them. Uncertainty made him look haughty. The captain's eyes flickered toward the crew members at their stations and back again. Bull could see how aware Ashford was that he was being watched. It deformed all his decisions, but there wasn't time for privacy.
"I have this under control, Mr. Baca," Ashford said. "All respect, Captain," Bull said, "but we've got to shoot down Holden, and we have to do it before anyone else does."
"We're not going to do a damn thing until we know what's going on, mister," Ashford said, his voice taking a dangerous buzz.
"I've sent back a request for clarification to Ceres to see whether the higher-ups authorized Holden's action, and I am monitoring the activity of the Earther fleet."
The slip was telling. Not UN. Earther. Bull felt the blood in his neck. Ashford's casual racism and incompetence was about to get them all killed. He gritted his teeth, lowered his head, and raised his voice.
"Sir, there's a calculation happening right now with Earth and Mars both.
This is a potentially volatile situation, Mr. Baca, where they have to decide whether to take direct response or let Holden win, and I am not going to be the one to throw gas on the fire, escalating to violence at this point, and once they start shooting at him, they're going to start shooting at us."
Pa's voice cut through the air like a single flute in a bass symphony.
"He's right, sir."
Bull and Ashford turned toward her. Ashford's surprise was a mirror of his own. The man at the sensor station muttered something to the woman next to him, the hiss of his voice carrying in the sudden silence.
"Mr. Baca's right," Pa said. "Holden's identified himself as a representative of the OPA. He's taken violent action against the Earth forces. The opposing commanders will have to look on us as his backup."
"Holden isn't a representative of the OPA," Ashford said. The bluster made him sound unsure.
"You called Ceres," Bull said. "If you're not sure, they're not either."
Ashford's face flushed red.
"Holden hasn't had any official status with the OPA since Fred Johnson fired him over his handling of Ganymede. If there's a question, I can clarify with the other commanders that Holden doesn't speak for us, but no one's taking any action. The best thing is to wait and let things cool down."
Pa looked down, then up again. It didn't matter that she'd humiliated Bull and Sam in front of the command staff. All that counted was doing this next part right. Bull wanted to reach out, touch her arm, lend her the courage to stand up to Ashford. It turned out she didn't need it.
"Sir, If we don't take the initiative, someone else will. And then it's going to be too late for clarifications. Denials are fine if they're believed, but Holden and his crew were known to be working with us previously, and they're claiming to represent us now. We're 4 hours lag to Ceres. We can't wait for answers. We have to make the division between us and Holden unequivocal. Mr. Bach is right. We need to engage the Rocinante.
Ashford's face was gray.
I'm not going to start a shooting war, he said.
You listening to the same feeds as me, Captain?
Bull asked.
Everyone already thinks we did.
The Rocinante's one ship. We can take her out, Pa said. If we fight Earth or Mars, we'll lose.
The truth lay on the floor between them. Ashford put a hand to his chin. His eyes were flickering back and forth like he was reading something that wasn't there. Every second he didn't respond, his cowardice showed through, and Bull could see that the man knew it, resented it. Ashford was responsible and didn't want the responsibility. He was more afraid of looking bad than of losing.
Mr. Chen, Ashford said, get a tight beam to the Rocinante. Tell Captain Holden that it's an urgent matter.
Yes, sir, the communications officer said, and then a moment later, the Rocinante isn't accepting the connection, sir.
Captain? The man at the sensor array said. The Rocinante's changing course.
Where's she going? Ashford demanded, his gaze still locked on Bull.
Towards us, sir?
Ashford closed his eyes.
Mr. Corley, he growled. Power up the port missile array. Mr. Chen, I want tight beam connections to the Earth and Mars command ships, and I want them now.
Bull let himself sag back, the sense of urgency giving way to relief and a kind of melancholy.
One more time, Colonel Johnson. We dodge the bullet one more time.
Weapons board is green, sir,
the weapons officer said, her voice crisp and excited as a kid at an arcade. Lock target, Ashford said. Do I have those tight beams yet?
We're acknowledged and pending, sir, Chen said. They know we want to talk.
That'll do, Ashford said, and began pacing the bridge like an old-time captain on a wooden quarterdeck.
His hands were clasped behind his back. We have lock, the weapons officer said. Then, the Rocinante's weapon systems are powering up.
Ashford sank into his couch. His expression was sour. He'd been hoping, Bull realized, that it might be true, that the OPA might be making a play to control the ring. The man was an idiot.
Should we fire, sir?
The weapons officer asked, the strain in her voice like a dog on a leash. She wanted to, badly. Bull didn't think better of her for it. He glanced at Pa, but she was making a point of not looking at him.
Yes, Ashford said. Go ahead, fire.
One away, sir, the weapons officer said.
I'm getting an error code, the operations officer said. We're getting feedback from the launcher.
Bull's mouth tasted like a penny. If Holden had put a bomb on the behemoth, too, their problems might only be starting.
Is the missile out? Pa snapped. Tell me we don't have an armed torpedo stuck in the tube.
Yes, sir, the weapons officer said. The missile is away. We have confirmation.
The Rocinante is taking evasive maneuvers.
Is she returning fire? Ashford said.
No, sir, not yet, sir.
I'm getting errors in the electrical grid, sir. I think something shorted out. We might...
The bridge went dark.
Lose power, sir.
The monitors were black. The lights were off. The only sound was the hum of the air recyclers, running, Bull imagined, off the battery backups. Ashford's voice came out of the darkness.
Mr. Pa, did we ever test fire the missile systems?
I believe it's on the schedule for next week, sir, the XO said. Bull tuned his hand terminal screen to its brightest, lifting it like a torch. He glanced up at the emergency lighting set into the walls all around the room, sitting there as dark as everything else. Another system that hadn't been tested yet. A few seconds later, half of the bridge crew pulled flashlights out of recessed emergency lockers.
The light level came up as beams played across the room. No one spoke. No one needed to. If the Rocinante fired back, they were a dead target. But the chances were that they wouldn't lose the whole ship. If they'd waited until they were in pitched battle against Earth or Mars, or both, the behemoth would have died. Instead, they'd just shown the whole system how unprepared they were. It was the first time Bo was really glad to be just the security officer.
Exo? Bo said.
Yes?
Permission to release the chief engineer from house arrest?
Pa's face was monochrome gray in the dim light, and solemn as the grave. Still, he thought he saw a glint of bleak amusement in her eyes.
Permission granted, she said.